It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Time once again for the morning show on the Independence Network. Good morning. I'm David Iverson, one of your co-hosts up here in the blustery, windy, rainy Northeast Wyoming headquarters of Cowboy State Politics, and I'm joined by my good friend, my partner in crime, Joey Carrenti. Joey, is it as nasty down there as it is here?
Well, I got to tell you, it's probably at least pretty close. We got the gray swirling clouds, lots of wind, a constant hum in the background. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better today with snow and rain in the schedule for the next 2 days down here in south central Wyoming. But you know who's got it worse? And the reason you didn't get a brand new episode of Wide Right Turn this week, our good friend Tom Kelly is heading across the country to a meeting in Washington, D.C. And for a certified genius, I don't know. We'll have to test that when he gets back and find out what the bona fides on that are, because he went across the country in tornado season on a motorcycle. So he's having a tough time getting, a couple mechanical issues, but mostly it's been weather. He's been either hiding out or trying to avoid big weather systems coming in. I think right now he's stuck in Ohio. He should have been in D.C. by yesterday. But thoughts and prayers out there with Tom and his safety. But come on, guy.
Well, he does this every year. I mean, you would think at this point he had figured it out that maybe this isn't the right time for a cross-country trip on the bike. Though, I mean, all credit to him for taking the bike. I mean, he's tougher than I am. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's you just can't avoid some of that weather north to south. Normally, it's, you know, the weather's nicer the further south you go. But when it comes to tornadoes and spring season issues like that, you're not going to be able to avoid them. And I don't know. I haven't ridden a motorcycle in over a decade. I got equilibrium issues. So, yeah, good on him for just riding the bike, period. But to go through that and know that that's what he's getting into, just hope he's safe and we'll have him back. Bad weather looking like across the country today. So let's just get into some of the nastiness going on here in the Cowboy State. Heard you had a busy morning yesterday morning.
I did. It was fun times at the Sheridan County Commission. And you know, the first time that you attend a meeting, it's always fun when the people behind the dais don't exactly know who you are. And that was the first time that I had actually met any of the Sheridan County commissioners. So the whole time, you know, I had the Cowboy State Politics hat on, so, I mean, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion. But they all kind of looked at me with suspicion, and maybe a couple of them with a little derision. You know, I've talked about all of them on the program before, but it was fun to sit there and just kind of smile at them.
Well, I can't imagine that they were too thrilled once they found out who you were. But that in of itself is an issue for me of what you think, because I wasn't here. I wasn't talking about you before. Me being here changes nothing. It just means I'm going to have audio from the floor that I've recorded myself. Of course, you can get the audio of most of these meetings on their website. Some have video, some have pretty bad audio, but it's not like it's really going to change anything now that you're there in person. It wasn't going to stop you from reporting on any of the, entertainment, I'll call it, because it's really not governance that happened. But I can see, you know, we're going to talk probably over a few issues today that have to do with emotion over reality and maybe a little bit of, I don't know, nostalgia or self-importance over reality. So they probably believe that they're in a position that deserves more respect than their own personal actions or even their official actions have proven out. So yeah, I don't know that being in the room really changes anything.
Oh, it doesn't.
Same thing in the legislative session. Us being in the gallery doesn't stop us from accurately reporting on what's going on in the legislature. So Dan Zwanitzer can point at us all he wants and say, oh, those guys with the clipboards and the high capacity cameras and all this stuff. Hey, it doesn't change anything.
No, it doesn't. And one thing that it does show, though, is there was, let's see here, two other media outlets there. There was Aaron Palmer from Sheridan Media and Joseph Redcoat Baudette from the Sheridan Press. And that there is not an article talking about the one piece of public comment in that meeting. It is really disappointing because when the commissioners walked in, it was really business as usual. And this statement is going to sound a little bit contradictory because they do have the business of the county to conduct regardless of what's happening in their own personal lives. But you would think that there would at least be some acknowledgement as to what happened. I mean, what a politician does in their private life reflects upon their position. I mean, they are in a position of public trust. And I think many people would say that, you know, because you are an elected person, you ought to be held to a higher standard. And I don't mean a higher standard legally. I mean a higher standard personally, in that we elected you to represent us and your actions reflect upon your constituents. And so when you disrespect them by breaking the law, there needs to be, in my opinion, some acknowledgement of what happened, not just sitting up on the dais smiling and acting as if nothing happened.
Well, a couple things you said there. First of all, Joe Burdett from the Sheridan Press, Sheridan Media, which one's he with?
He's the Sheridan Press.
So I've met this guy, and I don't know if he's actually Redcoat. He might be. I think he's a straight-up Democrat. From what I've interacted with him on, he's never given me any illusion that he's pretending to be a Republican. So I don't know if the Redcoat moniker fits there. I think he might just be a straight-up, you know, liberal Democrat, which is fine, and I actually prefer. Does not change his style of writing, which has always been the Wyoming lamestream media standard of lefty lunacy. As far as how the council conducts itself, personally, yeah, I would say get out in front of it, have a quick statement and say, nope, we've already talked about this, and, you know, cut the people off the way they like to. But I will challenge the fact that they should be held and, well, I guess should be held to a higher standard legally is the statement I'm going to make. Because they take an oath to uphold the law and not violate it. And they can be removed from office for high crimes or misdemeanors, if we want to really get into it. And the crime that was committed is a misdemeanor. So I do believe that at very least we should have an equal standard, if not a higher standard, based on that oath that they take to the people they say they represent. And I guess we're going to get into a little bit of what happened during the meeting, but it's obvious what we're talking about. Christy Haswell, of course, was charged with DUI, has not been adjudicated of that yet. And I don't know that the council can take any official action while, you know, legal charges are pending and there's a trial or whatever. But we've seen this before, and the people have the right to be concerned and call for, I don't know, a statement, an answer, resignation, whatever the people want to call for. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but they have the right to be heard on this issue, and they do deserve some kind of candid, honest response to those inquiries.
At least a, you know, mea culpa, I'll try to do better. That's what Bill Novotny did. I'm not saying that anybody should rise to the standard of Bill Novotny. I will correct myself, though. He didn't make any public statement until after the case was adjudicated. And then it was a, I'm so sorry, I'll do better, please forgive me, little blurb in the paper. Now, one interesting thing that happened when we walked in there, one Sheridan County resident walked up to me and handed me what appeared to be an advertisement for WIO Rides. Now, WIO Rides is the private public transportation, public transportation business in Sheridan. It's Sheridan's version of a taxi. And the advertisement says, if you need a ride, call. And I said, well, this is fantastic. The guy's name was Douglas. And he said, yeah, I've distributed this to each of the county commissioners. I thought that, you know, maybe they're unaware that we do have a taxi service. So when they're out boozing it up, they have somebody to call. So he left a copy of the advertisement in each of the county commissioners' chairs. It was obvious when the county commissioners saw it that they were none too pleased. But Douglas Wheeler did get up. He was the one person to give public comment on it, which I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more public outrage. But Mr. Wheeler did get up and talk. Here's what he had to say.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, everybody. I left a little message for you guys.
Please state your name for our...
Douglas Wheeler. Left a little message. If you guys don't know what to do when you guys are driving intoxicated or not, phone a friend. Call WildShare. Call anybody. Don't jeopardize my family. It's wrong. It's illegal. And you guys don't even deserve to be up here right now.
Okay. Spot on. I think he made his point. Of course, nobody responded, but at least somebody from the crowd got up to speak on it.
I love the fact that anytime somebody stands up with something to say that they don't want to hear or deal with, they always interrupt them with kind of a condescending tone of, well, will you state your name for the record? And I've seen them let people get away with not introducing themselves when it's, you know, business as usual or something they really want to deal with. So that's always fun for me to listen to. You guys are really proving that whole two-tiered system of government, bureaucracy, whatever you're calling it, and your disdain for the people when you do that. You could at least ask nicely, say, excuse me, sir, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but we do have a policy, you know, not the barking at him part. I don't know that I'm surprised that there wasn't a whole lot of people that wanted to talk about it. I'm sure there are more people that wanted to talk about it, but that takes a lot of guts. Also, when something's still pending, you know, you're going to be on the record. Everybody's a warrior behind the keyboard, but you put them out in public when they actually have to face somebody. It doesn't happen. I think the guy was right. You know, there are other ways of dealing with your personal decisions. We had a standard in the Army every Friday at our safety briefing, which I tended to be the cause of most of the specific situational, you know, planning for the safety briefing, not because I was the safety officer, because I would go and do things that said, okay, now we got to brief people on what not to do when you're in Joey's situation. But it was always have a plan, bring a battle buddy, make sure you have enough money tucked away in your shoe for a cab. And we're dealing with 17, 18, 19 year old kids sometimes, and they can get it down. So I'm sure that the city council or the county commissioners or the legislators could figure out how to do that better. I don't think it's only this one program. I mean, you guys got Goose Creek Transit there in, yep, in Sheridan. You got a couple other things from the hub, driving mini buses all over town. So I think it was appropriate to say, hey, there were multiple other options. And for, I don't know, the citizenry or even an individual citizen to be disappointed in their elected representation and be able to voice that, that's America right there. I'm also not surprised that they had nothing to say and wanted to just get on with the agenda. But I don't know. It's I don't even know if she's up for re-election this year, if she's going to run again, any of that stuff. But really, we're going to have to wait, I guess, until this court case shakes out, because obviously nothing's going to happen at the commission level. It's the classic, well, it's not our job to deal with this, and we'll let the courts handle it. So we'll have to wait to see what the court decides.
Well, that's true to adjudicate it. But one thing I'd like to highlight in what you said is when you're an elected representative of the people, and a county commissioner is, there's a presumption that you think about things maybe at more, you know, more quickly than the average everyday Joe does. But you would think that if you're going to go out and booze it up, you have a plan to get home. You've called somebody ahead of time and said, hey, I'm going to go have a couple drinks. Would you mind giving me a ride home? Or, you know, if it's unexpected, you're, you know, have the presence of mind to pick up your phone. Everybody's got a cell phone on them, and just call somebody to say, hey, come get me. I think I've had too much to drink. But that didn't happen with Christy Antoinette Haswell. So I couldn't let things go. I waited until the end of the meeting, And then I had a brief conversation with Christy Antoinette Haswell, and basically she said, no comment to everything. Here's what she and I talked about. Commissioner Haswell.
Hi.
Hi.
My name's David Iverson.
Okay, hi, David.
I just wonder if you had any response to the question you were asked today.
I don't have any comments today.
Okay. So have you thought about resigning at all?
I don't have any comments today. Thank you, though, David. Appreciate you being here.
Okay, so when will you have a statement for the public?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Have you thought about resigning? No comment. Do you have any statement for the people that you just disappointed? I don't have any comment. I don't know when I'm going to have a comment. I mean, typical response from a politician that thinks that she's going to skate out of everything.
Well, of course she doesn't know when she's going to have a comment. She's a professional non-planner. She's not going to, you know, plan her Tuesday night, let alone plan her response to any of the crimes she commits on any given Tuesday night. I think the real question for Christy Haswell should be, and this has nothing to do with the issue she was trying to avoid, but her other actions in the past, is, do you believe that somebody who is arrested for DUI and in elected office is still qualified for office? Because we really still haven't locked down what she believes or what the Sheridan County commissioners believe qualified to hold office means. And you really look worse if your answer to that one is no comment. So I don't know. I guess we're just, again, going to have to wait and see. She's obviously not going to give anything up and feed what she sees as senseless and baseless, salacious entertainment. But it is a massive concern of the people. And I think that around the state, we should be asking every elected official on the record, do you think it's okay to be an elected official and represent the people and then go out and drink and drive and put people's lives in danger and get them on the record saying, no, I think that that is wrong. It's illegal and it should be dealt with not only through the courts, but also through whatever, you know, body you're elected to, and hold them to that standard. Because the problem here isn't not getting a statement from Christy Haswell. The problem here is, do you believe you're qualified for office? Because you seem to be so concerned with the qualifications and the elitism of the, you know, professional politician that you think you are, yet you can't follow basic laws that you've sworn an oath to uphold and follow. So you can no comment it all you want. Eventually, I mean, this is obviously going to shake out before the election. Again, I'll have to check. I don't know. Is she up for re-election? Do you know?
You know, on second thought, I don't think that she is. I think she got elected. Well, you know, I don't know. I'll find out and we'll get back to you on that one. I know that there's, let's see here, there's at least three positions on the county commissioners that are up for election. So, and I think that she might be one of them. Hopefully so. I have high hopes that we can get rid of Christy Antoinette Haswell. Well, moving on. There's a couple of pieces in various news outlets, one of which happens to be in the Cowpie, and it's about the glamour camping that the SLIB board authorized over in Jackson. And one of our Supreme Court justices heard the case in a capacity of a district judge, and the suit was brought by Teton County, and they're saying that the SLIB board, the State Lands and Investment Board, does not have the authority to override Teton County zoning regulations. And essentially what happened is the SLIB board said that there were two businesses that could use public land over around Jackson, one of which was to build a storage unit, basically a big warehouse, and the other was to a company that was going to set up, you know, glamour camping. And it's actually ridiculous because the structures that they set up are geodesic domes. If you don't know what those are, it's little domes that they set up all over the place, and supposedly it's going to protect you from the weather. If you go to downtown Cody, there's transparent geodesic domes that the city authorized to be built right down in town. And so Teton County is saying that the SLIB board doesn't have the authority to override their county regulations. There's another issue that's happening in Natrona County that's similar. about a gravel pit. And there's a big public controversy now that the state legislature didn't step in and prevent the gravel pit from going forward. Now, the reason I bring this up, Joey, is this idea of local control. Everybody screams about local control and how, you know, our counties need to be officiated in our county when it suits their interests. But when you're when local control doesn't line up with your own personal interests, then you scream at the legislature for them to do something. And it's I think that this whole issue, both Teton County and Natrona County, highlight an important discussion that we have to have about, you know, the powers of the county, the powers versus this of the state. And, you know, if you want local control, you ought to get local control, but don't complain when that actually happens. And I think that's the case. That's the case in Natrona County. It's completely the opposite in Teton County. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is have a discussion about local control. And I know you've got some thoughts on the matter, Joey, so I'll let you tee off and then we'll pick it up after that.
Well, in these situations specifically, first of all, when it comes to local control, I believe local control to a point is appropriate until it comes to things like fundamental rights. We've had this conversation before, the gun-free zones. I don't want to be in a world where town council or a school board gets to regulate my Second Amendment rights. I don't read anything in the Second Amendment that says shall not be infringed unless it's some whiny school board Karen complaining about guns. So there should be limits on the concept of local control, especially when it comes to fundamental rights. But in these two cases, and I'm not actually sure specifically each of these cases or how the state land ownership works, but my initial reaction would be, hey, if it's state land, then the state will regulate it. If it's county property, then the county will regulate it. If you make a land use plan in your county, guess what your land use plan doesn't allow you to regulate? State parks. That's state. I don't know about this specific property or the gravel pit area in Natrona County, what it's on, if it's on municipal property, private property, any of that stuff. But the level of control should always reside with the level of ownership. I get that Teton County has a presence and a posture it wants to maintain, but if this is, you know, state land, a state park, anything that's not under the direct control of the county, and again, I'm not sure how that exactly works. Counties are a political subdivision of the state, may manage some of this land on behalf of the state, but I know like Kurt Gowdy is a state park in Laramie County, and Laramie County doesn't get to regulate it. The Capitol building is state property in the city of Cheyenne in Laramie County, and the city and the county get no say on really what happens there. So in these two situations, it would really be, hey, I get that you don't like it, but it's the same thing as private property owner. I may not like some of the things my neighbors do, but it's their property and they pretty much have a right until they get into infringing on my liberties with the use of their property. Local control, again, when it comes back to like school boards, those schools are run by those school boards. Even though all schools are under the control of the state, there is a constitutional provision and or a statute that recognizes, hey, this is how it's done. So until somebody can bring me a piece of paper that is attached to the green books or the Constitution saying, nope, when it comes to, you know, state rangeland, the county has the say through their zoning commission, then I'm going to go ahead and say your argument for local control, as flawed as it may be on its face, is also not legitimate because this isn't county land.
Exactly right. And essentially, all of this has to do with our idea of what private property is. And I realize state land and county land, okay, those are pieces of public property. But it really boils down to what our conception of property rights are. So if I own a piece of property in, you know, anywhere, really, I ought to have the ability to do with it whatever I choose within the you know, within the scope of whatever regulations exist. But when it comes down to telling me what I can do with my private property, the government really needs to take a more hands-off approach. I mean, of course, you can't conduct illegal business on private property, but if everything meets the laws and the codes and everything, the state or the county shouldn't have any say in it whatsoever. Similarly, like you said, if it's a state park or state-controlled land, the county doesn't get a say in what happens, no matter what their zoning regulations are. And let's compare this to, you know, just a little bit ago, you brought up Second Amendment rights. All right. Well, the county cannot create a regulation or an ordinance dealing with your Second Amendment rights. First, because we have the Constitution, but second, because there is what is called a preemption statute in Wyoming, that state law preempts everything at the county level when it comes to the regulation of firearms. And the same principle applies to state-owned land and county-owned land, that the county can't tell the state what the state can or cannot do on property that is owned by the state. So I think that the Teton County instance is interesting because you have a county trying to overreach and tell the State Lands and Investment Board what to do. And now it's in court, and one of our liberal Supreme Court justices, right now, which justice it was escapes me, Davis, I think. But anyway, he's saying it's appalling that the state can supersede county regulations, but that's what the state does all the time. And then when you look at the gravel pit down in Casper, that was approved by the county, and it's a county issue. It's partially it's private property. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but we have to understand when you ask the state or the county to intervene in whatever dispute you're happening, you know, you're experiencing, you're essentially giving up some of your private property rights as well, because it changes how we view private property. And, you know, there's a lot of ordinances in just about every Wyoming community that infringe on your private property rights. For example, in Buffalo, Wyoming, there's a nuisance ordinance that says your grass can't be any higher than 6 inches. Okay, well, first of all, who's going to enforce that? I mean, are we going to have the grass police? But a lot of communities pass regulations that infringe on private property rights. And we seem to think that just because you sit on a dais, no matter what level that dais is, that you can make whatever regulations you want. And that's just not true. I mean, we have a system of property rights, and we need to respect those.
Well, if you really want to know who's going to enforce that ordinance, try selling Girl Scout cookies on that grass that's over 6 inches long, and I guarantee you, you're going to get somebody, at least if you're in Park County, coming and telling you, hey, you can't do that, and you need to cut your grass. It's interesting that this is happening in Teton. I'm not surprised it's happening in Teton County, but let's take it to the next level. Would a federal judge even hear a complaint from a county about something they're doing at Yellowstone? I mean, that's still in their county, and hey, this doesn't meet our zoning regulations. That's a national park. It's federally regulated. There are ways of going about addressing issues that are going on with use and development, but to straight up sue them and say, you don't have the right to because it's in our county. Yeah, I think that argument's going to fall flat on its face. And another one that's just be interesting to see how this shakes out because of who the judge is and the fact that they're even entertaining the complaint. I think it's pretty clear, whether it's right or wrong, whether I agree with it or not, that regulation, that zoning argument isn't just Teton County. If it's state property, then yeah, it's proper to deal with it at the state level. If the gravel pit issue, we didn't get what we wanted at the local level, who is responsible for it, so now we're going to go and make the legislature do it. That would be superseding, you know, the argument we're hearing here in Teton County, superseding at the state level. So it really comes down to some of the nuance, the ownership, the use, historical use of that property. And some people just have to accept the fact that you're not going to get your way by complaining. And I think this is just another case of lawfare. Some entitled person with a bunch of money didn't get their way, and now they're going to have a temper tantrum in a courtroom.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Yep, that's exactly right. Well, what do you got, Joey? I know you've been looking at the news desert that we're experiencing here on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it's kind of dry out there. Interesting story, follow-up from our opener story about the Sheridan County Commissioners. The city of Sheridan is to pursue a federal Safe Streets grant. The city of Sheridan is hoping to identify ways of making its streets safer in the coming months by applying for a Department of Transportation grant of $250,000 with a 20% match from the city. I guess the focus here is to have zero deaths or serious injuries as their Vision Zero policy. And it looks like our good friends, Andy Petzig. Am I saying that right?
Petzig, yes.
It's not Pactag. It's Petzig.
Yeah.
Petzig. That's what
there
I thought it was. And Ms. Jennings there on the Sheridan City Council voted against it because, again, it is federal money for a special program with strings attached to include President Joe Biden's executive orders on climate change, DEI, and other mandates, which is weird because this is just a road construction project, but somehow they're going to get some money to do some road projects that's going to make it 100% safe and have zero fatalities or serious injuries in the city of Sheridan. I know there's been a lot of road work down there in Sheridan, especially on Main Street lately, but I don't think it's the condition of the roads that is the most dangerous thing. I'm wondering if by taking this money and going to their Vision Zero policy, if they're just going to ban county commissioners from driving on city streets to make sure that they're actually safe in line with the federal regulations they're going to have to deal with in taking this money.
Well, that was my first question when you brought it up, Joey. Is this a federal anti-drunk driving measure? That would be entirely appropriate, and I think you might get the votes of Andy Patzig and Kristen Jennings on that one, just to say that county commissioners can't booze it up and go drive around, you know, on all the city streets. I'm driving around in my automobile. But this is a big issue with a lot of Wyoming towns. They're in many cases struggling for money to do whatever projects they want to do. And when the federal government dangles a big carrot in front of your face and says, hey, we'll give you $250,000. All you have to do is agree to all of these things. And there's always a number of strings attached with any federal money. Under the Biden administration, all of it has to relate to climate change, DEI, a whole bunch of onerous regulations that, you know, perhaps, and I can't say that the Sheridan City Council unwittingly agreed to this, because I'm sure Commissioner Jennings, or Councilwoman Jennings and City Councilman Andy Patzig brought this to their attention, that there are federal strings attached, that it is climate change and DEI, and the city still voted for it. But we've got this idea that because it's federal money, it's okay to take it, because, you know, somehow that's, it's not state money, so we're not paying for it. It's absolutely ridiculous. You see the same thing in the legislature all the time, that, well, the federal government is giving us, you know, $1 billion for COVID, or, you know, the affordable, whatever it was, the American Recovery Act or whatever they called it. And so we're just going to take that money, regardless of what the stipulations on it are. And the truth is that those stipulations are going to affect a smaller community to a greater degree than they would. I'm not saying they're good either way, but to a greater degree than they would the state, because you're going to have, you know, elected officials at the city level saying, oh, no, now you have to have DEI hiring policies. And I'm sorry, you can't turn on the batch plant because you're, you know, putting CO2 into the atmosphere. I'm sure that there's all sorts of things attached to that.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. And I wouldn't doubt that the federal government has wasted more tax dollars hiring just droves of new employees to come out and check and make sure that that money is being spent in the way it was intended, and that all of these little nuanced feelings-based executive orders are being adhered to. And what'll be interesting, and I'll have to do some research on this, is once Biden's no longer in office and some of these, you know, executive orders or programs are, you know, overridden, go away, change, are they still held to the standard? I mean, I know contract law a little bit, And even when certain things change, unless you're signing a new contract, the provisions of the old contract are the provisions you still must follow. So I'm wondering, even if some of this stuff goes away on paper, you still have a contract saying we took this money at one point, we have to do this in perpetuity, otherwise we're in violation of the contract. And I don't know how, again, we're hitting a lot of things that Joey's got to say he doesn't know, which I'll do when I actually don't know. But it's concerning to me across the board, even when it comes to things like road construction. You're telling me you have to have a certain diversity in your road construction crew, otherwise the project can't kick off. You know, you got to have one of these and one of those and two of these and, you know, a certain balance of this, otherwise you can't lay asphalt. It's ridiculous. It's going to become more problematic in the coming months and years. And I'm glad that we have, you know, two principled thinking people on this council saying, it's not that we don't want safe roads. It's that you have to look at all this other stuff. And it's unfortunate that we have a majority of the council that says, shut up and give us the money.
Well, let's bounce over to the county real quick. Yesterday at the county commissioner's meeting, they, of course, approved all of the warrants. If you're not familiar with the word warrant, basically it means that they paid the bills. And one of those, and this was brought to everybody's attention by Commissioner Holly Jennings, one of those was to approve the purchase of rainbow tote bags by the Sheridan County Public Health Department. And interestingly enough, Joey, this was another grant from the Wyoming Department of Health, and they approved the purchase of these rainbow tote bags to promote STD awareness in the county. And it just so happens that the tote bags are due to be delivered right before this so-called Pride Month. Now, of course, Commissioner Jennings brought this to the attention of the county commissioners and said, you know, she didn't agree with any of this. She actually went and talked to the director of public health. And of course, the public health director said something to the effect of, oh, I didn't even realize it's Pride Month. You know, we just try to raise awareness of sexually transmitted diseases. The reason I bring this up is it is the exact same thing as the Wyoming Department of Health funding drag shows. It's, again, state grants that are being divvied up to smaller groups for the promotion of a political agenda. And that was one of the things that keep calling her councilwoman. See, it's hard with this Jennings cabal. I mean, there's so many titles to figure out. But anyway, Commissioner Jennings brought it up and said, look, I don't agree with us using tax dollars to pay for political ideologies. But she did say, well, the money's already been spent. And so, you know, she went ahead and voted for the warrants. But yet another instance of the Wyoming Department of Health divvying up money for the LGBTQZXPDS community.
And this is not the first time that this has happened. It happened here in Carbon County. Regular music in the park, I think Thursdays over in Rawlins, the County Department of Health goes up there. And for a couple of years now, they've had regular, you know, rainbow flags, condoms with LGBTQ sayings. They're like, I don't know, gay fortune cookies or something. I have no idea. I haven't seen them. Books and literature, not about diseases, but about these certain types of lifestyles, promoting them. And my question was, and I never got an answer from the Department of Health at the county or state level, is, are these diseases you're talking about an exclusive problem to the LGBT community, or can any human being contract these diseases through the types of activities that you talk about? And they said, well, no, it's a disease. Anybody can get it. And this is the question I haven't gotten the answer to. Then why is all of your material aimed towards a specific group of people promoting an ideology instead of just talking about the disease and the way you contract it? No. If you're the Department of Health, deal with health. Everything else is social politics, and it's none of your business. And in the Sheridan County case, I'd be interested to hear, and I know I won't get an answer to this either, if the rainbow still meant what it was supposed to mean, which was God's promise to never flood the earth again, it became a religious issue, would you have still bought rainbow bags and been okay with spending taxpayer money on what could be considered? In fact, I think a lot of people in rejection of the LGBTQ's community's use of the rainbow, I'm not saying anybody owns the rainbow, could consider the county have just bought a bunch of bags that promote a religious ideology as well. So it's not a what if, it is actually happening. And where they would stand on that, whether the money was already spent or not. You know, we may not be able to fix this one issue, but don't brush it off, because what we're trying to do is change the action. And this will continue to happen if it's, oh, well, we already did it, so there's not. No, there's a difference between fixing a problem and addressing the issue. Okay, we may not be able to fix the problem. You already wasted the money on the queer bags or whatever you're calling them. But addressing the issue is not doing this in the future, or knowing what the limits on what you can and can't buy are. And why it isn't just promoting the Department of Health is beyond me. I think all that material, first of all, I'm not a fan of government-funded swag anyway. Run me into any census taker who's got his little table of free pens and pencils and pads of paper and bags and Rubik's cubes. I'm like, why are we wasting taxpayer dollars on this for the census? Oh, it helps people get involved. Well, yeah, I think you're wasting taxpayer dollars. But yeah, it shouldn't be, you know, focused on one group of individuals when the aim that they claim is a disease that everybody could be exposed to, every human being could contract if you engage in certain practices. And that's what the Department of Health should be focused on. Contraction, how you get it, dealing with it, living with it, and getting rid of it. That's it, period.
Well, it's just a case of one special interest group figuring out that they can use taxpayer dollars to further their own political agenda. And so far, they've gotten away with it. Now, we have two instances of where taxpayer dollars was used to push this LGBTQ stuff. And as it relates to that, and I realize this whole morning show has turned into a discussion of the LGBTQ agenda. I was driving around in my automobile yesterday, and I went past what they call the reproductive clinic here in Sheridan. And out front, they had a giant pride flag. Question, why are they, is the reproductive clinic flying a pride flag? Because by definition, those folks that are into that lifestyle can't reproduce among themselves, as far as I know. Men cannot become women, women cannot become men, and men certainly cannot conceive a child. So it just struck me as odd as I was driving around in my automobile. Another place where we find this is, sadly, Joey, the Boy Scouts are no more. Did you see this article at all?
I did, and I'm probably not going to have the same reaction as you. You're a lifelong Boy Scout, so you'll probably have a deeper connection to this story. So fire away with your angle. But yeah, I did hear that they are now scouting America.
Yeah, ridiculous. And you're right. I do have a personal connection to this whole thing because I'm an Eagle Scout from back when that actually meant something. But now, according to Breitbart News, the Boy Scout movement is now trans-friendly and an authentic self-group. And I quote, the Boy Scouts, and by the way, weren't they always an authentic self-group? I mean, their name is Boy Scout. Anyway, the Boy Scouts of America is changing its 114-year-old name, according to a statement from the tech sector CEO who runs the fabled organization, in what seems to be a bid to deny the reality that boys are different than girls. The new sexually neutral name Scouting America will send a really strong message to everyone in America that they can come to this program and they can bring their authentic self. Crones, and that was by Roger Crone, the CEO of now Scouting America, Crone's authentic self phrase matches language used by transgender activists who oppose the public recognition that boys and girls, women and men, have different needs, desires, and I'll insert, different body parts. The pro-transgender activists insist that young children can create their individual sexual persona and gender regardless of their male or female nature. Oh, there's so much stuff in here, Joey, that we are taking a group that was started and specifically aimed at the development of character of young men. And now we're saying that, well, anybody can be a young man. And frankly, we're just doing away with that whole gender thing because, you know, we're all the same and we can change our gender at will. Absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, on a personal note, it's one of my prized possessions are my Eagle Scout medals. And every time I look at them, I just have to shake my head and in disgust of what that organization has turned into.
Well, in your statement, you said we are now changing. I'm going to ask a question I've asked you before. What do you mean we, white man? We didn't change the name of Boy Scouts of America. They internally hired somebody or had somebody rise up through the ranks, and the directors of Boy Scouts of America have chosen to change their names, and I think they're going to have to face the reality that, you know, Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch, and all these other companies are facing of go woke, go broke. I get, again, this is why I pointed out, I know you have a personal connection. It meant something to you. It was a different organization at the time, obviously. And now I think they're going to just have to face the reality of what they're deciding. And I'm wondering if they're going to keep the internal rank structure the same, because now the ascending to the rank of we blow finally has a meaning, because Scouting America, yeah, they blow. It's gonna be,
man,
you know, or the they didn't have a rank called we suck. I think it's important that you know, I'll maybe go out on a little further limb on this one, with political ideologies and the way we idolize past, you know, political superpowers like Ronald Reagan. Well, guess what? Ronald Reagan did some things wrong too. And the problem that I have with people, you know, invoking the name Reagan or their nostalgia about that is, are you really taking the principles that he focused on and moving forward with the principles? Or are you just hoping that dude jumps out of the grave and takes over again? I think it's kind of the same thing here with the Boy Scouts or Scouting America. You have a different experience. You have a different history. And for you to be able to move forward with what you learned and what you took away from that organization, yeah, it's a sad day for the title, for the group. But, you know, you still have that. You could still start your own organization, or you can still live your life with the values you learned that aren't necessarily going to be the same values taught by this organization. So it is sad, but I think this falls more into the nostalgia and the go woke, go broke realm than anything. You know, we talk a lot about politics. I don't think this is a political issue. I think it's a social issue. I think they're a private organization, and I think they're going to suffer the consequences. It wasn't too long ago that I believe they filed for bankruptcy. So it's not like they were in great shape and making good decisions historically as it was. And I'm glad you got to have the experience you did. And yeah, sometimes, I mean, I just don't know that we should be getting too involved in telling them you can't do that.
No,
you
I don't
have
think
to look
it's
at your kids sometime and say, I raised you better than that. You were better than that. And if you're going to make these bad decisions, I'm just going to have to, you know, come visit you in jail.
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of you can't do that. I think it's more a cultural commentary on where we're at. You know, we started with an organization, and I use the term we to mean more like a collective culture. We, I don't even know if that makes sense, but you know, like the Boy Scouts of America started out as an organization to help develop the character of young men. And they're in, you know, when I was involved in the organization, there were a lot of kids that had, you know, difficult childhoods. Maybe they didn't have a dad at home, whatever. But you learned values that, you know, are important. And now we're apparently at a place where the terms men and women don't mean anything. But I can tell you, Joey, that this whole situation developed one of what is perhaps one of the greatest sound bites on YouTube, or at least if you look at the views, one of the more popular sound bites. And it's Ben Shapiro talking to some woke activist about the Boy Scouts. Take a listen to this.
Like, not be accepted because they don't really fit in either place. They can't just, like...
I'm saying that the Boy Scouts have a standard. You must be a biological boy to be a Boy Scout. You have to be a boy to be a Boy Scout.
Where's that written, though?
In the name Boy Scouts.
Where's that written? It's in the name. But we're at some absurd place.
Not anymore. Yeah, not anymore, unfortunately. And I don't know how that argument came up to eventually make Ben Shapiro not be able to say that line anymore. But Yeah, somehow somebody got to the inner workings of the Boy Scouts of America and said, no, it's got to be for everybody. And, you know, there's plenty of organizations that are kind of like the Boy Scouts that are for everybody, the Woodcraft Rangers and all these other groups. But, hey, again, like I said, that was the choice of the Boy Scouts to no longer be Boy Scouts. It'll be interesting to see what the Girl Scouts do. Personally, myself, I didn't have experience with any of that. I was co-opted and corrupted by the Masonic family and grew up as a demolay instead. And we've never had gender identity issues in that group. We have plenty of other Illuminati-esque evils to focus on rather than apples and bananas. So it's not like we had it any better. It was just a different level of evil that we were dealing with.
Well, it's in a way, it all deals with language. And there's yet another ridiculous piece in the Wyoming Turkey Vulture that is kind of along the same lines. But it's an op-ed written by this lady. Her last name is Bert. Apparently cut off her first name. Not that it matters. But anyway, the op-ed is entitled, Abortion is Healthcare, and Gordon was right to veto House Bill 148. Oh boy. And I quote, the Wyoming Freedom Caucus has united in the condemnation of Governor Mark Gordon for his veto of House Bill 148, Regulation of Abortions, and raised concerns about the need for Wyoming to return to our three-branch system of government. It's hard to decipher the meaning of this statement, the veto power of the governor, blah, blah, blah. And skip a paragraph, and it says, abortion is an extremely safe procedure, much safer than giving birth. And she goes on to claim that abortion is health care. And this is another instance of the one I brought up earlier, how a reproductive health care clinic is flying a pride flag. Abortion, by definition, is killing a baby. So if you're killing something, how is that providing for its health? Abortion is clearly not health care. Nor, I don't think that you could make a credible argument that it is. But what say you, Mr. Corrente?
Well, let's look at the complaint. And the complaint is over House Bill 148, which wasn't an anti-abortion bill. It was, as long as we're going to have abortion while we're waiting for the court to make its decision on the laws that we've already passed, let's regulate and ensure the safety of the individuals getting individuals. Look, they've got me doing it now. The women getting abortions, basic medical standards. You have to have certain equipment, certain certificates, certain admitting privileges, be within a certain distance of a hospital that could handle a situation if something goes wrong. That was actually providing healthcare for women getting abortions, making sure that when some of these things that do happen in this extremely safe procedure come up, it can be properly dealt with rather than losing two lives. You're absolutely right. The death rate in abortion is 100%. Somebody always comes out of that abortion clinic with one less life on the planet than walked into that abortion clinic. That is not an argument. I also have a problem with the fact they call it reproductive health. It's not reproductive health. You are actively and surgically doing battle with your functioning reproductive system. How do we know? Because you're pregnant and that reproductive system is obviously functioning. So I don't know where the argument of the three branches of government we need to get back to comes up. The argument was made on the floor of the legislature, which is one branch of government. It passed resoundingly in both houses. It was summarily vetoed by, you know, go green, kill your baby and grab your gun, Gordon, which is another branch of government doing their job, which I think this lady should be pissed off at Gordon saying, hey, this measure was just going to make sure that all these, you know, baby killing asshats had admitting privileges to hospitals and could actually take care of a woman they may accidentally kill. And then we also have our other two abortion laws that are currently being adjudicated in the third branch of government, the judicial system. So we do have a functioning triple branch, even when it comes to abortion. And I think they're all at least active, if not acting appropriately. I don't agree with Governor Gordon's veto on this at all. And even if there was a possibility that some abortion clinics would not be able to open or not be able to stay open, that's not because it's, you know, the argument of we're trying to shut down abortion clinics. The legislative posture that came out when the bill passed was We want to make sure that while you're doing this, regardless of how safe you believe it to be, procedure, that you can have access to and admitting privileges for a proper medical facility to deal with anything that may come up. So I think this lady's totally off her rocker. I'm going to argue till the day I die. Abortion isn't healthcare. It's not reproductive health. It is murder. And I think we need to start with, you know, eat the elephant one bite at a time. Just say, we're not going to do it in Wyoming. We'll worry about the rest of the country and the rest of the world later. You want to murder your baby, drive down to Denver. Murder your baby there. I don't even want the tax revenue for the medical procedure coming into Wyoming. Sorry, I have principles, but I'm not sorry that I have principles.
Well, and that's exactly the point. I mean, an argument against House Bill 148 is essentially that you want unrestricted abortion, in that you want to be able to kill your baby at any point. And it's, honestly, Joey, I find the whole thing repugnant, that you're going to advocate for unrestricted abortion, which is essentially what this woman is saying, that we don't need to have any regulation of abortion doctors, and we should just be free to do whatever we want, whenever we want, and kill as many people as we want. House Bill 148, like you said, that just regulated abortion clinics and said there are medical rules you have to abide by if you're going to perform this procedure. And one of those is that you have to have admitting privileges so that when you accidentally kill a second life or attempt to kill a second life, then you can get that person to the hospital. But one phrase in here really kind of struck me. And it's, again, the same argument that she's making through the entire piece. But it says, quote, "An abortion is an important part of reproductive health care for women and must be available to women and their health care providers without interference from overreaching legislators." So, again, without interference at all from anybody, we just need to be able to kill as many people as we can. And here's another question, Joey. If the baby is female and you kill it in an abortion, is that still women's reproductive health care? This is how ridiculous this argument is.
Yeah, I would argue none of it is reproductive health care in the first place, especially the fact that you're now destroying a second viable reproductive system. But if she wants zero government interference, then let's go ahead and take her up on that and make sure that zero tax dollars are going to any of these clinics or any of these individuals. You have to pay for your abortions yourself, and all abortion clinics must be completely privately funded. No Medicaid, no Medicare, none of the government involvement that would go along with running a medical facility. Knock yourself out and do it on your own dime. That would be probably step one before we get it out of Wyoming. And I want to point out again, this lady's saying Governor Gordon was right with his little veto fest that included let's keep murdering babies. So when you're out there on the campaign trail listening to people try to get your vote, ask them, hey, did you agree with Governor Gordon's vetoes, and really listen to their answers? Because anybody who agrees with Gordon on most things not only wants to kill Wyoming's economy, but is making it easier to kill Wyoming's babies. And I'm just going to leave it there. We're almost to the end of the hour here. And you don't want me going further than this, because it's going to take more than a minute and a half.
Well, I think this is a big topic, and it's one that we need to continually have, because the left has captured the media, in total, really. But on this issue, they continue to print op-eds like this. And like I said, this is in the Wyoming Turkey Vulture. And it's an attempt to convince you of something that's not true, which is what the media does all the time. And, it's abortion is not health care. It's not caring for women. It's murder. It's killing another innocent human life, which all of us should find that absolutely repugnant. Well, we've got about a minute left in the program. Coming up on Cowboy State Politics, I'm just going to kind of bounce around the news. We're going to talk about the county commissioners meeting again, play you both of those sound bites, and just kind of play catch up from where we were yesterday, since I was talking with Antoinette Haswell yesterday. What do you got going on, Joey?
Well, I got a lot of things going on around the house, so I'm going to take another step back probably throughout the rest of the week. And since everybody's missing Tom Kelly and we're wishing him well, we're going to do some more of the best of Wide Right Turn on Just Blame Joey Live at 11 a.m. here on the Independence Network.
All right. Well, Cowboy State Politics is coming up next. Don't miss a minute of the Independence Network. We've got great programs like Cowboy State Politics, Just Blame Joey, Wide Right Turn, and many, many more.